Welcome to our CyberWise Chats, where we talk about the challenges of raising and teaching digital kids. I'm Diana Graber, author of Raising Humans in a Digital World and founder of CyberWise and CyberCivics. Join every episode with Dr. Pamela Rutledge, who's the director of the Media Psychology Research Center. Our always lively conversations tackle topics like cyberbullying, screen time, TikTok, and everything in between. We've got some great guests and promise each chat will give you the tips, tricks, and confidence you need to help kids use technology safely and wisely.
Okay, so without further ado, thank you for joining us in a timely manner, everybody. Welcome to today's CyberWise chat. I'm Diana Graber from CyberWise and CyberCivics, and also author of Raising Humans in a Digital World, here as always with Dr. Pamela Rutledge, who's the director of the Media Psychology Research Center. And we're really happy to have Darren Lauer join us today. You may know him as the White Hatter. I'm really pleased that he could make time for this. For those of you who do not know Darren, he has dedicated his life to public safety. He has over 30 years of law enforcement experience and is a recently retired and highly respected staff sergeant with the Victoria City Police Department in British Columbia. He now leads a safety and digital literacy education company that facilitates workshops and provides presentations on technology, safety, and privacy. He is an expert on today's topic, which, as you know, is about sextortion. Is sextortion on the rise? What parents need to know. I want to say that the reason we chose this topic was really because of two heartbreaking articles that we ran across this year, both teenage boys, great boys, that committed suicide as a result of sextortion. And it really hit us deeply. I put the articles in the chat box if you want to take a closer look. But I think it's such an important topic to talk about. In case you don't know what sextortion is, the short answer is it is a form of blackmail in which the attacker threatens to send intimate images or videos of the victim to others if they do not pay them or give them additional images or video. In the March of this year in the US, the FBI warned of an increase in sextortion cases targeting young boys. So we have a lot to talk about today. But one thing I want to say at the outset is that sextortion, although serious, is extremely rare. So let's always keep that in mind as we go through this half hour, 45 minutes together. Research conducted by the Cyberbullying Research Center in 2018 found that only 5% of youth had reported being a victim of sextortion. But still, 5% is too many, which is why we're talking about it today. There's a couple other terms you're going to hear us throwing around today. Sexting, closely related, although different from sextortion, and also what some people call revenge porn. So before we get started today, Pam, can you give us a help with the terminology here?
Sure. I think an easy way to think about it is sort of as a continuum, and see if you agree with me, Darren. But sexting is the voluntary sharing of intimate sexual images, you know, usually between a boyfriend and girlfriend, right? Revenge porn is when something goes south and those images are used to essentially blackmail someone, but not in the way that we're going to be talking about with sextortion, which is really almost a professional approach to extracting, you know, money or more images from someone. But what I want to say is that many cases of sexting actually are a form of sextortion because of the peer pressure, because someone will feel pressured into, well, I want to keep my boyfriend, or I want to keep my girlfriend, or I want to, you know, fill in the blank. And so they feel obligated to do it. But like Diana says, sextortion itself is fairly rare. Sexting, however, and Diana, you can speak to this, is much more common and is a problem, especially in the United States. Darren's hailing from up north in Canada, in the United States, where there are such different legal standards that can be very problematic for kids.
We'll get into sexting later in this talk, but sorry to derail you here, Darren, but wanted to go back a little bit to the numbers because you have a better fix on that than I do and more updated research. So let's start there. If you could kind of give us like the lowdown, like what are we looking numbers wise?
Yeah, you know what? This has been happening for years. I mean, probably one of the best noted ones is the Amanda Todd case from back in 2012, right? But there's no doubt that over the past 2 years of COVID, we have seen an anecdotal spike being reported to law enforcement internationally, right? You mentioned the research done by the cyberbullying, Dr. Justin Patch and Dr. Samir, two great friends of ours and yours as well, that pre-COVID, about 5%. Well, just recently in 2020, there were some more peer-reviewed research that just came out. Now, it was based upon adults, over 2,000 of them, 18 and older, and they found that 4.5% of those who identified as male, men, said they were victims of sextortion, and about 2.3% of women. And this is concurrent or very congruent with what we found here at the White Hatter. We've now helped, as of last night, 89 teens who've connected with us as a result of being targeted needing help. 85 of them have identified as male, teen boys, and only 4 were female. So, you know, over the past 2 years, there's been a real targeted approach, surgical targeted approach, to those who identify as young men. And, you know, Dr. Rutledge can probably comment more on why that is happening.
Yeah, so before we talk the nuts and bolts on how it happens, which is really fascinating, and Darren has enlightened Pam and I, so I can't wait for him to give you guys more information. But first, always like to look at what's happening in the teen brain, right?
Yeah.
Like, why is this happening? Why do they fall for this, Pam? What's going on?
Well, I think we need to think about, first of all, that we're coming out of a pandemic, so online use is up. The fact that it's up means it's become more normalized. So parents need to be aware of, you know, you can't just shut off this thing. The best way to do it is to prepare kids. But developmentally, here we have the population that we're talking about, teens, young adults. They are developmentally very outward socially focused. That is their developmental task. And they are very, therefore, vulnerable to people who connect with them, right? Who tell them that they're pretty or tell them that they're handsome, who make them feel like they have a new friend. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It just plays into the hands of the sextortionist. So skills to recognize real versus not real friendships is really important. For teens, they don't have, and for all the parents who have teens, right, they don't have their full prefrontal cortex yet, right? They don't have the ability to do the kind of risk assessment and long-range planning that they will later. That makes them, on the positive side, very open to new things, but on the negative side, it makes them not able to assess the risk. But it also, importantly to those articles that you were talking about, Diana, makes them unable to see a future where they get past this. It makes them very emotional and very sure that the world has come to an end, which is why we want these kids prepared. We want you to prepare your kids so that it doesn't get to that point. If you are one of those 1%, you know, from my point of view, any child is too many. And I know you all agree with that. But, you know, so the numbers are small, but let's prepare.
And yeah, I think the other
thing I will say in relation to that is we have to remember our kids are growing up in this very visual culture. This is what we talk about a lot in cyber civics. They see visual imagery every second of the day on every app they use. So, you know, it's like, what's the big deal is what I hear from kids. And we have to yes, it is a big deal. So, Darren, this is when I'd like you to kind of walk parents through how you see it happening and so they understand really the nuts and bolts of sextortion.
Yeah. So I'm going to specifically speak to people who are committing this crime who the child doesn't know, love, or trust. Commonly known as a capper, which is short for capturing, right? Because the whole goal is to capture an intimate image or video and then use that for the purpose of extortion or what's known as sextortion. So what will happen is these cappers will create fake accounts, also known as sock puppets in their world, where they will screen capture pictures of other young people that they flood their social media page with as the hook, the bait, the start of the luring process, the grooming process. And what they will do is they will then connect with kids wherever they are. So wherever kids are online, that's where these guys will go. But the most popular ones right now include Instagram, Snapchat, and then also places like Omegle, Emerald Chat, Yubu, Bigo. So wherever the kids are, that's where they will be. And they will initiate contact, first contact, to kind of bait the hook to see if who they're connecting with will want to converse with. So it usually starts with hi. And if they get a hi back, the conversation begins to the point where the capper will now start to add in some sexual context just to see if the youth is going to bite. And if they do, they will then off-platform the child. They will then ask the child or the youth, let's move over to a more private chatting location, be it Instagram messages, Snapchat, or in places like Google Hangouts. And the reason they're doing that is because they want to cut the prey from the herd. They need privacy to commit this crime, as well as the ability to covertly record it. So once they move over off-platform the kids, they will start to engage sexually to the point where images, pictures are shared and or video, usually looping video, recorded. However, over the past couple of months, we've now dealt with a couple of cases where the capper is using a live female juvenile that we believe are being human trafficked. But in some cases, they're voluntarily doing this as well. To bait the child or the youth to do something sexually in front of their camera, which they are now recording. And then once they've recorded it, they reveal the trap and basically say, we got ya. And now if you don't pay us some money, if you don't send us gift cards from the iTunes store or say the Steam wallet app, or if you don't provide us with more video or pictures, we are going to send this to your friends and followers. And a part of that pretext is that before they connect with the child, they will usually screen capture their friends and followers on Instagram or wherever they are. And they'll say, listen, we know who your friends are, and we are actually going to send them these pictures if you don't do what I say I did. Now, what we have seen over the past 2 years is that this has moved to a more of a Machiavellian crime organization. So we're seeing people who are doing this out of places like Russia, Southeast Asia, primarily India, Somalia, Nigeria, Southeast Africa. And why? Because there's big money being made right now in this area.
So I think that's important to remember, especially when parents are tempted to give such young children access to cell phones and digital devices, is to remember that that's a potential connection to people all over the world. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just aren't ready. And, you know, Pamela, we get asked a lot about this week. I've been asked a lot, like, what kind of signs are parents looking for?
I think the signs that you should look for if your child is prey to anything from, you know, severe cyberbullying to sextortion are very similar to what you would see for clinical depression. A loss of interest in regular activities, their grades dropping, not wanting to engage with their regular friends or family, sort of excessive escapism, whether that's video game playing, sneaking alcohol, taking drugs. But all of these things are problem signs, sleeping too much, eating too much, not sleeping, not eating. All of these things are signs of depression. Depression doesn't just bring out of nothing. It comes out of a trigger, right? Whether that's, you know, the sextortion or whatever, but all of those are warning signs that you need to intervene and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, something that really stuck with me when we had our pre-chat about this is, Darren, you know, when parents think about this, they think about the Snapchats and the Instagrams, possibly the Omegles. But you mentioned that you see a lot of this happening on Google Hangouts, which is something parents would never think about because our kids are using Google tools all the time for school.
Right.
So why would Google Hangouts be a place where this is happening?
Again, they'll connect with them in the major platforms, but the whole idea is to move them into private chat, right? They call it off-platforming them. And Google Hangouts is one of those places. But the other benefit to these cappers is that Google Hangouts allows them to quickly and covertly screen capture everything that's going on without the youth knowing that it's happening. So that's primarily why it's going on, is to reduce witnesses, and it's easy to record and use for the purpose of extortion.
Right. That's so interesting.
And that's one of the keys to be aware of, right? Like if the kids are talking to somebody and then all of a sudden they're saying, hey, let's move over to another place to start talking more private, little bells should be going off, right?
And that's kind of the trend right now with this generation coming up next, is they're looking for more private places to connect online because they've heard, you know, big bad Facebook and Meta and all that. They're not into that anymore. So we're seeing kids moving into these smaller private areas online that gets harder and harder for us to manage or even know about. But it's important to have that open line of communication with your kids so that they tell you, hey, this is what I'm doing today, or this is where I'm going, just like we would in the old days. You know, now we have to know where they're going online to kind of keep track of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So we said we talk a little bit about revenge porn, but before we do, Darren, you didn't like that term.
It's you know, porn is seen to be adult entertainment, and there's nothing entertaining about this. That's why I like to call it technology facilitated sexual violence. That's what it is, right? And it doesn't, and we can use that for both, you know, adults and teens. So that's why I like staying away from revenge porn, but a lot of people know it as such.
Yeah. And I'd like to share a little story about that, because it actually really hits home to our organization, CyberWise and CyberCivics. My right hand and left hand guy, Peter Kelly, who works with me, actually came to us because of an incident at his high school. He was a high school English teacher and coach. And there was a girl that he knew from his classes. She was a cheerleader, very popular, that was in a relationship with another high school boy, and they exchanged intimate photos. They broke up, had a terrible breakup. The boy immediately shared the images all around the school. Everyone saw him. And the girl really paid the price. She was kicked off the cheerleading team. And Peter says really ostracized from a lot of the groups that she belonged to, and had a hard time, like, you know, holding her head up and finding a group to belong to the rest of high school. And in his view, the boy didn't really pay the price. So that was the reason he came to work for us. He's like, I never want to see this happen again. We have got to teach kids ahead of time about this stuff so it doesn't happen. So
and that's such an important point, Diana, because we do culturally have a tendency to blame the victim, right? Especially when it comes to sexual abuse and sexual assault. But an important part of all of this, whether it's bullying or sextortion, and certainly in sextortion, is that the victim or the target feels very ashamed once it becomes clear that they have been tricked. And it's really important as a parent to let the kid or the young person know it's really not their fault, right? They were set up. It could happen to anyone. And what we don't want is somebody trying to deal with it on their own, emptying out their bank account, and then feeling despondent. And as those examples, taking very serious action, like killing themselves, because they're so ashamed. They don't want to let their parents down. They don't want to be punished. They don't want all of these things, which just compiles the problem. So, you know, I feel for that girl, and, you know, kind of makes you want to storm into the principal's office, go, what the hell?
And just to build on that, right? I've heard the same thing, Diana. And, you know, there's inequality on this topic. You know, when it happens to young girls, what I hear from the young women at schools, middle schools and high schools, is when it happens, excuse the term, because this is what the kids use, the females are slut shamed. But if it's a guy's nude that goes public, there seem to be a stud. Yeah, good on you. Like there's this inequality associated with this. And this is why we need to move away from those types of issues, right?
Yeah. You know, the other disparity that exists here is between countries. So we talked a lot about this, especially regarding sexting, which is something I teach kids in through CyberCivics. We have several lessons regarding sexting. And the big takeaway for kids is you're in trouble. You get in serious trouble if you send a sext or you receive one, even if you didn't ask for it. You all of a sudden are the holder of child pornography on your phone. And in many states in the United States still, if you have child pornography on your phone, if you're a minor, you are in deep water. And I know, Darren, it's different in Canada. And I wish it were here too, because that's part of the reason why kids aren't speaking up, because they know how serious it is to have this stuff on the phone. So
yeah, the Supreme Court in Canada ruled a couple of years ago that if it's two teens under the age of 18 in a private consensual relationship where there is no power imbalance, if they're sharing those nudes within the privacy of that relationship, it's not illegal. It escapes the child pornography laws. However, if that picture or video is now shared or showed outside of the relationship without the consent of the other person in that relationship, then that person, it doesn't matter if it's a teen or an adult, can now be charged with the distribution of non-consensual distributed images or child pornography if it's somebody under the age of 18. Now, in Canada, we have one criminal code, applies to all our provinces and territories. Think of it like states in the U.S. Whereas what I find, because we do a lot of presenting in the U.S. as well, is that every state has its own law. And so what's illegal in one state may not be illegal in another. So a good example, Washington State's laws on this are very similar to those in Canada, right? And so one of the best resources I share with the U.S. audience is, again, the Cyberbullying Research Center. They have a great resource on every state's laws specific to this issue that I would highly recommend that you look at. But Dan, I think you hit it on the head. One of the reasons kids won't come forward is because in some states, just sending a nude even with somebody consensually, is illegal. And if they come to report that they've been victimized, they're afraid they're going to be arrested.
Yeah. And in some states, it's a law that they're expelled or suspended from school. So kids know that part of it, and they do not want that to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop us for 1 second because we are getting a lot of questions in the chat box. Here's one. Do we know if there is a certain profile of offenders, extortioners?
I'll answer that one right now. It can happen anywhere. But what's really interesting is, you know, when we're working with teens, they're actually sending us the profiles. And one of the keys to look for, especially on Instagram profiles, is that they will have like thousands of followers, thousands who are. But when you look at the numbers they've posted, under five, usually zero. clue, right? But that's usually one of the prime things to look at. But again, you know, these cappers can be anybody, including somebody you know, love, or trust. But for the Machiavellian criminalized groups, again, they're coming from those external countries that I mentioned.
And someone asked here too, the name of the bullying resource per state. And I'm putting it up here. It's the Cyberbullying Research Center. They have great data on their website.
They do.
But I actually use that in my lesson. I have the kids and their teacher have to research this, what the law is in their state as part of our lesson.
There's another smart idea because they change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we're seeing.
Yeah. Is there like a Megan's Law site for incidents like this?
Well, you can report to the FBI and they encourage you to do so. I don't know if there's state reporting. I think that I don't know that the FBI will do anything, but it's really important to report it so that we have some better accurate sense of the numbers because of the shame. And we were talking about this earlier, because of the shame, we know that these are numbers are very underreported.
Yeah.
And without them being reported, we can't get the help and funding and make this the issue it needs to be. So, you know, reporting it, the FBI, reporting it to local authorities, pending these state laws that could jeopardize the child.
And here in Canada, we have the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, which is kind of a national clearinghouse where you can make the report and then they follow up with the appropriate law enforcement jurisdiction. But they also have a program, just a great program called Project Arachnid. So any pictures that are going public, you can send it to them. They hash it, digitally fingerprint it, and then Project Arachnid goes out there. And if it's posted, they then start to initiate takedown. So we have a national reporting process here in Canada.
That would be a hard one to sell in the U.S. because of the, you know, identity issues and, you know, tracking images and stuff.
Yeah. And I've got another question here about what is the data on this. I know I put a lot of links in the chat box today, folks, but if you scroll up, we put some of the research that Darren mentioned at the very top, all kinds of links to his website and his last podcast that has a lot of data on this. We have a couple of resources from CyberWise that I stuck in there as well. So. All right, so I want to move on just a little bit. So we know what to look out for the signs. Let's talk a little bit more what to do when and if you know what's happening. Like, what is the first thing you would tell a parent to do? Darren, you want to grab that one? Because I know you.
Yeah. So number one, don't pay the ransom. If you do, you're labeled a whale. They'll come back for more. Number two, stop all contact, any kind of contact, because the longer you stay on and connect with them, the more likely it is they're going to keep the pressure on. Next one is screen capture everything as evidence, just in case the police get involved. Number four is to actually report it to law enforcement. But there are times where parents don't want to do that. And I understand some of the reasons why that are very legitimate. Then what I want them to do is I want parents to set up Google Alerts, A-L-E-R-T-S, and put their kids' names in quotation marks. And the reason I want them to do that is because if these individuals do post the picture or video and tag it with the child's name in the light web, Google Alerts will often pick up on it, send you an alert so you know exactly where it's posted, and now you can make application to have it taken down, right? Which is really, really important. And usually we find after 24 to 48 hours, after you break contact, they will just move on to the next target. And of the 89 cases that we've helped with, only two cases did the pictures get forwarded to only two people, not one case where they have been sent to a wide, big, great audience. Not saying it can't happen, it can, but in most cases that we've dealt with, they don't get spread. These guys just move on to the next target because time is money to them.
And I will say, it strikes me how different it is between countries, because in the US, especially when we teach about sexting, it's really different from cyberbullying. In a cyberbullying incident, you tell the kid, take a screenshot of the evidence and save it for later. Sexting, no way. Do not take a screenshot of the evidence, because guess what? all of a sudden you're the holder of that kind of material on your phone. Don't send it to an adult because then they have it on their phone, but do report it to the platform where it's happening. So it's important to just know the distinction between the US and Canada. In the US, you do not want to have any kind of child pornography on your phone at all.
Which makes it very difficult to document your claims.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. Our laws have not caught up to what's to the reality of what's happening on phones.
Right. But let me piggyback on Darren's advice, which is all outstanding. But I think that for parents, take a deep breath, first of all. This is a very emotional and sort of scary topic for you. It's 10 times that for your kid. So it's really important that you establish some kind of communication and before, right? Do this before anything happens so that they know that they can come to you, that no matter what they do, no matter what stupid thing happens, that you're there to help and support them. Because as we were talking about earlier, kids don't have the ability to see the other side, and that you're so important to that process of getting them there, as whether you're a caring adult, a teacher, a parent, someone that they respect. And parents, they in fact do respect you, even if they don't act like it. You know, your opinion really does matter. So establish that connection or that bond, and then empower them with the right to do exactly what Darren has said. They feel that some kids don't feel like they have the right to block someone, turn them off, disconnect. It somehow is like rude or it's something. So you have to teach them that those skills are okay, and that's part of their ability to set their own boundaries to protect themselves.
And what kills me, honestly, is that we don't teach kids this in school. I mean, I always say, like, you know, we did driver's ed, like we need to do sexting ed, texting ed, because this stuff happens. And, you know, we don't talk to kids about it. And that's part of the problem, is they're afraid to talk to their parents or they're embarrassed. But I'm so lucky to teach this to middle schoolers, because you open the door. And I'm telling you, I've never taught this and not had 1,000 stories come from the kids of, like, well, so-and-so did this, and I heard about this person, and blah, blah, blah. You've just opened an ability for them to share their experiences with each other. And it doesn't become taboo, and you're able to help them think through it. So I would urge, if your school in middle school is not teaching this, you need to talk to the school principal, because these things will bubble up in high school and kids are going to pay the price unless you address this early.
And this segues very nicely. I mean, I know your thought process is the same as ours when we're teaching in schools, right? Like, I still see schools like to teach there's a difference between real world safety and online safety, right? That's boomer logic to the kids are thinking. To the kids, it's just one world, or what we call the on-life world, right? So should we be teaching sexting as a separate issue? No. It should actually be a part of healthy human sexuality.
Someone
as
just
a topic,
wrote that.
Right?
Like, oh, that was scary. Yeah, wouldn't it be great if this was part of the health curriculum? It should be. It's so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and this, right? This wasn't, sextortion was not invented by the internet, right? It existed before. It's just now a lot easier and a lot more widespread.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Well, I just want to give you a plug here, Diana, because what I love about what you do with the kids, first of all, getting them to talk about it, but you also model strategies, role play strategies for dealing with the problems. They listen to other kids, how they've dealt with them. And that's a huge part of learning how to take care of yourself, is by understanding the steps that you can take by seeing someone role playing it, however you can do it with your child.
And in my mind, it really is a part of digital literacy. And the reason for that is because that's visual literacy.
Right.
And I mean, come on, people, look at TikTok. Tell me that's not sexting. Like, there's so much naked stuff on there. And the kids see that every day. So why wouldn't they send the same image to their boyfriend, you know?
Right.
So it's just really hard for kids to know where the lines are drawn online. You've got to help them with that. So, all right, this is the time that we do our takeaways. Darren, I feel like you have so much more information to give us. So I'm going to give you the floor again. Is there anything that you have not shared that we really need to hear?
Three things I want to say. You know, educate, when it comes to these issues or any issues dealing with the on-life world, it's all about educating ourselves on this topic, right? Because knowledge and the understanding and application of knowledge is power. And that's a part of what you do with CyberWise and the doc does through what it is that she does, and what we do here at the White Hatter as well. But number two, I do think the secret sauce in keeping our kids safer, because we can never keep them 100% safe. That's unrealistic. But we can do things to keep them safer. And one of the ways to do that is to allow the kids to have some agency in what's going on in their lives, in their online world. Number two, parents, we need to start modeling good digital literacy. In fact, I would argue that there's way more adult sexting than there are teens. And then combine that with parental participation, parental communication, parental overwatch, as that's the secret sauce. And number three, and the doc talked about this, let your kids know that your love for them is 100% unconditional love. And that no matter what, if something happens in their on-life world, they can come to you for help without fear that you're going to overreact, punishment, or embarrassment, right? Like, you need to be your child's best parent and be the mama bear and papa bear. And they need to know that. And that although you may not agree, your goal here is to get them through what they perceive to be their crisis, not your perception, their perception, and that you'll work through it and help them, right? We can deal with consequences to actions down the road somewhere. But the last thing you want to be saying to your kids when this happens is, how many times did I tell you, don't do this, right? Don't do, like, they don't need to hear that. What they need to hear is to go give your kid, take three deep breaths, go over, give your kid a big hug and say, you know what? I am here to help you and we are going to get through this together. That's what we should be doing.
That is such awesome advice. I think that cannot make endless better than on those words, but I know Pam's going to have some good words too.
It's a hard act to follow. You know, my first point is exactly that, you know, which is it's so important to build trust in a relationship. But I love the way you describe that, Darren. The other is focus on prevention. Teach your kids, arm them so that they know what to recognize. Like Darren was saying, when the bells go off, if somebody tries to move you to a private server, so that this doesn't happen, so it doesn't escalate. And no matter what happens, which is sort of related to Darren's point, alleviate the shame, right? This happens to a lot of people, a lot of smart people, a lot of professional people, all kinds of people have been tricked. Some people are even sending, you know, money to the prince in Botswana or wherever that guy is who keeps offering to send you millions of dollars. So, and people, but you know, it's a normal human behavior to want connection and to want gain. And so alleviate the shame so that they don't feel bad about themselves because they're already feeling bad about themselves. And the last thing I want to say is, in case you don't realize it, psychological pain has physical consequences, right? We feel it the same way. It affects our bodies. So if a child is in pain, even though this is all virtual, it can have physical repercussions, right? Anxiety, stress, and all of those things that come from that. So don't overlook this just because, oh, it's just all online. As Darren said, this is, their world is on and off. There is no differentiator.
Just really quickly, we need to start moving away from teaching stranger danger to start teaching situational danger. It's really hard for kids to understand stranger profiles, but it's really easy for them to understand dangerous situations. And the way to do that is to understand the lures, the grooming tactics that these individuals will use to exploit and predate our kids online. That way, if the kids know the lure or the groom, it doesn't matter if it's somebody they know or they don't know. They understand what that person is doing is wrong and therefore is more likely to react accordingly. Stimulus response training.
That's really good advice. And the other thing I would say is we got to start younger. Because yeah. I'm hearing these stories so young.
I've seen it as early as grade 4.
Yeah. I'm seeing 5 is pretty typical. And the thing to remember is, like, first of all, these kids aren't old enough to be on social media networks. So why are they on them? Because they don't have the critical thinking skills to recognize the situational things. You know, it takes a little time for that brain to develop. It's happening younger. Try to withhold the cell phone if you can. Make sure they're getting educated on this in school. It's very important. And there's so many great resources on this. Somebody asked if I could put them all in one place. So if you give me a couple of days, I'll put this on our CyberWise chat page on the CyberWise website. I'll put a link to all of the stuff we talked to today because there's a lot of it. All right, guys. Thank you so much, Darren. You've been awesome today. And as always, thank you, Pam, for your wise.
I want to leave everybody knowing that in September, we're going to take the flip side of this, right? What's the best defense? Resilience. And so in September, we're going to tackle building a resilient kid.
Yeah. And it's not just resilience against this, it's for everything that they will encounter online. Resilience is the number one antidote. So, and our date for that is the 15th, September 15th, because we're taking August off. And not completely off, but off from this. And noon, September 15th. So we hope that you will join them then. And real last thing, how young do you recommend parents start talking to their kids about this? As soon as you hand them a connected device, you got a lot of talking to do before you hand them something that connects them to the world. Why? So
absolutely.
Keep that in mind. Got a lot of work to do, parents. All right, guys. Thanks so much. And
thank you.
Until next
time.
You.
Darren, right. Thank you.
Bye from the Great White North.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.